roles that people get into. Again, if a kid is being, let's say a situation where there is an older and stronger sibling, I think that may be along the lines of what you're talking about, who is by nature a very aggressive kid. And the immediate younger sibling is a more placid, easygoing kind of kid. What can happen is, because of that type of interplay, that they identify themselves or they see themselves as these kind of people, and it becomes part of their identity. In other words, again, I'm differentiating between the sort of more normal sibling rivalry where, you know, they push, they shove, they call each other names, and then it's over, but where one clearly either tortures the other one, or where one so clearly dominates the other one because it is stronger, and usually it's not even a matter of strength, by the way. It usually has more to do with an aggressiveness. You'll find that that's more important, because sometimes a kid who may not be as strong, et cetera, as big, but if he has that sort of aggressive position, if he has sort of that backbone, he stands up even to an older brother. So then that person can fall into a role. It can become sort of their identity. And then even outside of the home, they lapse into that. They're always the one giving in, or et cetera. Or for that matter, the bully becomes like a professional bully. If something like that is emerging, that's a time when you more actively intervene. That's a time when you try to help the kid. You know, you might actually say, because I said earlier that in sibling rivalry, less is more. The less you get involved, the better off it is. The more you want them to work out their differences. But if working out their differences isn't the normal kind of conflict resolution, or isn't the kind of conflict resolution that you want to promote, then you get involved. And then that might be a situation where you might even say, like, let's say they're habitually fighting over who gets the computer, and one of the kids always gives in. By the way, it could be the older kid also. Sometimes you have that, where the younger kid is the aggressive go-getter, and the older one is the more placid one. If they're getting locked into a role, and again, if you don't know, fast forward to adulthood. If they're that kind of person as adults, if they're the kind of people adults who always give in, who always passively comply, that won't help them. Then you get in, you can say, no, that's not a suitable solution. No, that's not okay with me. Sometimes you get what my mother used to call in Latin, the gitanar. The good fool. You know, the person, so that's usually a girl, who always gives in because she wants to make peace, she's a people pleaser, etc. If it's excessive, and again, if you think that's not going to be helpful to them, you can say, no, that's not acceptable to me. And by the way, I'm backtracking a little bit. Even in normal sibling rivalry, and as I said, again, as much as possible, you should try to give the reins over to the children. Let the children be the ones who work out the differences. Let's say they can't. You keep sending them back and saying, well, if you want the computer, you got to work out a schedule how you share it. And no matter how hard they try, they can't. That may be a time, and so now I'm going back to normal sibling rivalry, that may be a time where you get involved, but you get involved as little as possible. You want as much as possible for them to come up with a solution. So you might say to them then, okay, come here. What do you think could be a solution to this problem? Why doesn't each of you write down three possible solutions, and let's see from that if we can work something out. So you're coaching them, you're helping them, again, you're training them in conflict resolution. But again, you want them, in the normal circumstances, you want them to come up with a solution. Here, in a situation where a kid's locked in a role, where a kid's, let's say, the constant, you know, passive complier, or in other words, another kid is constantly dominating, then you can come in, and again, you're the parent, you're the boss. And you can say, that's not acceptable, no, I'm sorry, you've given in all the time, that's not good, I want you sometimes to have your way as well. Or sometimes maybe you can speak to the child individually and say, that's not acceptable to me. Okay. Let me just see if there's anything else, and then maybe we have some time for some give and take. Okay. One more thing, and that alludes to something that this gentleman said over here as well. Any time with children, anything that goes on, it will be, you know, what you model and what you display will also have some bearing. For that matter, how you get along with your siblings currently will be a model and will be something that they're going to look at as a model of how they should get along with their siblings. Or for that matter, and again, I mentioned earlier, sometimes you hear stories about siblings who fought, you know, killed each other, fighting tooth and nail, and now suddenly are getting along beautifully. There's nothing wrong with telling kids that, because sometimes they think that their relationship's going to be like this the rest of their lives. And you can say, look how well we get along, and we used to fight a lot as well. But not only, again, as I'm saying, the two key lessons of sibling rivalry is conflict resolution and getting over, you know, accepting the inequities in life. If you're constantly complaining about other people that have more, if you're not happy with your lot, or if you're constantly looking and comparing, your children are going to do that with each other as well. In fact, I'll tell you one thing that I've done, and it's, I tend to be somewhat sarcastic and make a lot of enemies this way, but sometimes when my children complain, my children will say, well, you know, the cones that the children go to sleep at 11 o'clock. I'll say, well, you have to understand the difference between the cones and the bowling balls. The cones love their children. But they don't... most people don't like that solution, and... you know, I'm interested in trying to drum up some business for my colleagues, so I do these kind of things. Or sometimes even I'll say to my kids when they complain about some inequity that, you know, you gave him more ice cream, so I love him more. But it's displacing it. But if you are, in fact, let me tell you a very interesting study. How are we doing time-wise? Okay. I mean, very quick, because I'm pretty much wrapping up, so I have a little time for some give and take. A very interesting study that was done. You have to pay attention a little bit, but it speaks to this issue of comparing. Okay, about 5 years ago, psychologists woke up and said, you know, for years and years and years, we're studying why people are unhappy, why people are depressed. Let's study why people are happy. And they did a whole bunch of studies. They couldn't call it happiness because it doesn't sound scientific. See, brave people come late and sit right next to the teacher. Look at that. That's great. Okay, they couldn't just call it happiness because that doesn't sound scientific. So they called it SWB, subjective well-being. Just happiness, okay? And they did a number of things. They did the following study. They assessed people's levels of happiness. So they divided, let's say, for simplistic sake, they divided people into happy people and unhappy people. Then they gave them a task to do. And next to them was somebody else doing the same task, but unbeknownst to them, that person was a Confederate. That person was from the study. And they fixed it in such a way that no matter how well the person did on that task, the guy next to them always did better. So the guy got, let's say on the test, the guy got a 95, the guy next to him got 100. If he got a 65, the guy next to him got a 70. But no matter what, the person next to them always did better. Now listen carefully to what they found. They found that happy people who did poorly on the task left the situation more content than unhappy people who did well on the task because the guy next to them did better. So basically the point was that unhappy or happy people don't compare. Happy people aren't looking over their shoulder to see who's doing better or who has more. Unhappy people are busy looking and judging, etc. So if you're not going to, if your kids are preoccupied with who has what, etc., maybe you have to, and again, we're not, you know, there's no better mirror of our souls than our children. You know, we can't see ourselves. Maybe we have, maybe inadvertently, maybe, you know, maybe we're mumbling under our breath when we walk by our neighbor and we see his new Lexus, you know. Maybe we're doing something, and we have to then think back and we have to consider whether we're actually modeling this. And the same thing goes with conflict resolution. How are we resolving conflicts with our spouses? How are we resolving conflicts with our siblings, with our neighbors, with our coworkers? And if we're not modeling appropriate degrees of assertiveness and compromise, then our children are not going to be able to do it either, and they're going to experiment with their siblings. I think I've pretty much covered everything that I can think of at this point. Maybe we can open it up for some give and take, or if they're unresolved, then go ahead. Yeah. Okay, so that's a very good question in terms of really fits much more into a talk about self-esteem, but the whole issue of complimenting children. And we have to compliment our children. We have to applaud our children. Huh? Right, in front of the other one. It's okay, even in front of the other one. The worst thing you can do is compliment the child for something they're not good at, because they're not stupid, and they know. So you take a guy with two left feet who can't dribble a ball. I have to tell you, I have a friend in my neighborhood who, when he was growing up, he was like the worst athlete in the world. He couldn't catch a ball for anything, and he was always being, you know, picked on and always the last one chosen on a team. And today, he lives in the same neighborhood with a lot of these kids he grew up with, but he's an obstetrician. He says that's God's revenge because he's catching these guys' children. You know, so you know, he's payback. But you know, you say to a kid, "Oh, you're such a great athlete." You're hurting the child more because the child knows you're faking. Compliments and supporting to compliment children, but the compliments have to be suited to the kid. So granted, and let's say, so let's say again, you have two kids close in age, and one's an incredible athlete, and one's not so good. And you say in front of both of them, you're a great athlete. There's nothing wrong with that, because that's life. Because in the course of life, there are going to be people who have skills that you don't have, that you wished you had, and they're going to get a lot of kudos for that. You have to learn how to cope with that. Now, does that mean you don't compliment the child for what he's good at? Of course, you compliment him for what he's good at as well. But you're not, again, unless it's done excessively, if you're not doing the child a favor by withholding the compliment, because that's not what's going to happen to him in life. And in life, there will be situations where people are going to get recognition and credit that you wish you could get that you're not getting. Now, the problem is, I'll get you in a second, okay? The problem is when there's a major disparity between two, let's say, as I mentioned earlier, with the triplets there, or with twins, where there is a child born, let's say, with some sort of delays, disabilities, etc. Now, I'm not talking about anything even excessive, but I'm talking about some of the minor, you know, some of the minor delays, etc., but the ones that make enough of an impact. And the other kid is a superstar. And that's very difficult. And in fact, by the way, that is sometimes even a risk factor for problems. Because, you know, when we talk about risk factors for difficulties, one of them is having a sibling or a parent who is quite exceptional. In fact, I often say it's one reason why I'm purposely staying very mediocre for my children's sake, because I don't want them to have that struggle. You know, I'm doing a very good job at it, too. But, you know, so that's already a much more difficult situation. And there you have to sort of compensate as much. First of all, to find those areas where the child is does well, but there you have to compensate more often with the affection, with the kissing, with the warmth, because you can't lie to a child. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to put them in a role that... Okay, I mean, to some extent... Yeah, okay, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Although it may be just a natural kind of thing. One of the things, by the way, that happens, you hear again and again from parents, that they can't believe the two siblings are from the same family because they're so different. I think we all have a need for a distinct identity. We all need for a distinction. So sometimes what happens is the second kid looks at the first one and says, that's who I'm not going to be. So you get a lot of that kind of polarization. That's nothing out of the ordinary. If it's accurate, if the kid who's really got great social skills really is inherently capable of doing well in school but is defining himself that way, that's a different story. But it could very well be that that's who he is. And let me tell you something in terms of what I've observed, maybe you've observed it as well. Very often the people with the social intelligence do a lot better in life than those with the academic intelligence. You know, so, you know, they say that one college president once said that, you know, you should treat your C students better than your A students. Your A students are going to become professors. Your C students are going to become businessmen. They're going to be the ones who are going to endow the school later on. You were anxious in the back. Did it say something? Yeah. Sure. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. 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 Broken bones. Right. 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 Sure. I had a friend once who was talking to one of his daughters and saying that, you know, you hit your sister on purpose. She said, no, I didn't. I said, no, I saw you hit your sister on purpose. She said, no, hitting on purpose is when you make them bleed. You're right that sometimes it happens very, very quickly. There are, and that's beyond what we're supposed to talk about here, there are techniques, interventions for children with these kind of impulse problems. And it's really, that's already a separate issue. Just without going into great details, you have to sensitize them to the buildup. You have to let them know so they can catch themselves. There are methods, there are interventions for something like that. The other thing, by the way, is that if it is, and I'm not adverse to this, generally speaking, by the way, you want, as I said, you want children to have sibling rivalry. It's normal, and they learn skills that way. If it is so excessive, and if it's out of hand, then there is nothing wrong with, you know, saying to them, you guys got to be apart for a while. Sometimes even just a period of time, if you have like a moratorium where they're apart, then things can settle, and then you can sort of reintroduce them to each other, especially then you have some time to teach your child some more self-control skills. You're anxious to say something. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And if there deeper, and moved at one time with him, then with me, and I have nothing to say, life is not fair, they're still comparing all the time, and, you know, why he got this, and I got that, why did he go first, why he spend all the time with him, not with me, and I'll probably explain
right.
Enough that they don't understand.
I mean, they can't understand yet.
They don't.
No, let me tell you something. I'm going to correct you. The kids don't present us with challenges unless they're ready to do it, unless they're ready to deal with it. If they're already caught up in this, then they're ready to learn that lesson. In other words, they have reached the understanding of the world that there is such a thing as inequity, and therefore they're posing you with that problem. They wouldn't pose it to you if they weren't ready to deal with it. So I'm going to sort of, it's maybe audacious on my part, but I'm going to assume that no, if they're caught up in this, then it's, you know, then they're ready for it. Now what I'm going to say, correct me if I'm paraphrasing question, I'll get to you in a minute, okay? I'll get that ready. But you're saying it's so excessive that it's not like what I'm saying where it's periodic and in between. It's just it's a major, major preoccupation. And let's say you've ruled out anything else going on. There aren't other stressors. There aren't that. This is the normal thing. If it is so excessive, first of all, you put, again, the onus of responsibility on both of them. If I hear one more time about three, oh, great, okay. Give you a lot of credit. There's some things called medication. for the parents, not for the kids, yeah. Right. Right, and housekeepers, there's all sorts of stuff, you know. I have one parent tell me that she had a friend over from a very fancy schmancy home, and she watched, you know, and this woman was making the beds in her house, and she looked at her friend and said, "Oh, your mommy's not only a mommy, she's also a housekeeper." But at any rate, the if it is, you know, again, the onus of responsibility is on both of them. If I keep hearing both of you, I'm first, we're not going to go. You can even do it, if they're young enough, say, now go back to your room and come back and I don't want to hear this, I'm first. Again, putting it on both of them. Now you're not taking sides, and now they got to figure out how to solve this themselves. If it's really out of control, and it's so much so, and again, here's the criteria. If you feel that they're so caught up with it, and they're so preoccupied that they're not learning, they're not progressing, they're on like, you know, that treadmill, they're going no place, then you take over, then you say, you know what, odd even days. That's it. You know, then you take over. Then you're modeling for them, for example. And instead of having them do it, you're sort of modeling for them a solution. It sounds like they're very young. If they're a little older, then you put the onus on them. So, look, we have a problem with who goes first, who goes second, or the age-old problem, who sits in the front? You know, what do they call the seat with the, you know, Shotgun, yeah. Who rides shotgun? Right. The shotgun. Who rides shotgun? If they can't figure it out themselves, then you solve it. But again, not because you want to take over for them, but now you're modeling. And in fact, you can make that instruction. You see how easy it was to solve it. We picked up some sort of objective criteria and we made it to see how easy it is to solve these problems. Then, so even if you have to take over, you're bestowing on them the ability to try to make those solutions. Okay? You're anxious to say something about that. Yeah.
Environment, but I think some
things are just inherently born within.
100% correct, yes. So then you have positioning in the sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, let's say you have four kids, but there's always like that one kid that will aggravate all the three other kids.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if you have like these three kids and then years later you have a fourth kid? Well, you know which kid's going to be the one.
Right.
And then many years later you have a fourth child.
Right.
But it's your third child that has problems with the two older siblings and the younger siblings.
Right. And is there a major age disparity between that child and the younger one?
Yeah.
Okay. 6 years, okay, yeah.
But
okay.
I'm saying, but if that one child is like it's not normal for one child to be in rivalry with every sibling.
Mm-hmm. Is it not normal? It's unusual. It's unusual. Yeah. Right. It could be a general insecurity, a general sense that they're feeling disadvantaged. By the way, I should correct one thing I'm saying, and I want to resonate with something you said also. every time a new sibling comes into the home, or for that matter, when a sibling leaves the home, they go off to college, to Israel or something like that, the whole complexion, all relationships change. Even sometimes when they go away for a weekend, all the alliances sort of change. So it's a natural, normal thing that everybody shifts and moves around and goes through a transitional period, even if there is a big age disparity when a new child comes along. That's not your typical sibling rivalry. That's just the alliances shifting, etc. You're correct also, by the way, and I'm glad you mentioned this, that people are not, you know, we tend to look very much at the environment. But kids are born with what we call temperaments. And any nurse in a nursery will tell you that. Some kids are just naturally aggressive. Some kids are more naturally placid. Some kids are naturally, I think, even more jealous. They're just like, you know, they're more observant. You know, I think it's not that they're born jealous, but they're very acutely aware of their surroundings. So they're aware of some of the disparities. Some kids have a much harder time with injustice. You know, so there are inherent differences. And that... Okay, well, it depends. Again, if it's... The truth of the matter is, since God made us so different, there's many different ways to be successful functioning adults. So you can be a successful adult as an aggressive person, and you can be a successful adult as a less aggressive person. A certain amount of aggressiveness we all need. A certain amount of ability to compromise and bend we all need. But it's a range. So the kid who is born, let's say, is a very aggressive kind of kid, can be a very successful adult, can engage in conflict resolution, can handle life's inequities, but he'll handle it differently than the more you know, stereotypical Californian. Okay, but again, they still need these skills. There's nobody in the world who can always if somebody in this has to always have their way. I don't care how aggressive and competent and bright they are. They'll always meet a situation where they can't have their way. So they may handle it differently, but everybody needs these skills in their own fashion, in their own way. A kid, you know, I hear what you're saying. Sometimes kids are just, it happens to be their position in such a way in a family that it almost seems like they're getting the raw end of the deal. You know, like they just sort of like, you know, they're getting it from one end to the other end, a kid sandwiched between very difficult kids, or sometimes, and it's again, it's a situation of itself. Let's say an immediate sibling is a kid who needs a lot of attention. Suppose a kid is born and the next immediate sibling has difficulties, has developmental delays, has medical ailments, etc., or it's just a needy kind of kid. So you have those and those kind of inequities. And if it's a medical thing, then they feel guilty putting the bands on the parents, and then they learn to just sort of take things in. And again, all these are special situations that require a unique perspective. But it can happen that a kid is just in a position, and if you're aware of that, and basically what I would tell you is if the sibling rivalry is such that it's so intense that they're not learning from it, that it's just consuming them, then you intervene, and then you reduce it, or then you do something to give them their own unique... Right. Okay. What does this mean? 3 minutes. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. When it comes to something like that, then you need to more actively intervene. It has. In other words, it's almost like giving medication. It's like, you know, the doctors talk about titrating, making sure you have the right dosage. The kids need the right dosage of sibling rivalry. If it's too little or too much, too little would be when you have this sterile environment, everybody has their own room, everybody has their own TV, and you're portioning, again, you're counting the bubbles in the Pepsi Cola. That's too little. Too much is if it's so excessive that it's more painful than instructive, then you reduce it, you control it as the parent, then you intervene, then you take a kid like that and give them their own room, or something like that. Oh my God, something, I must open a can of worms. I think you raised your hand first, go ahead, yeah. No, you're right here, yeah, yeah. Right. Always the case, yeah. I mean, if they're together.
When they're together.
Right.
They've got a friend or an activity, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because simply they're not as
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I've tried other scenarios to, you know, take them away and separate them, but they just want to be all the time together.
Both want to be together.
Pretty much.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time.
Because usually the older one doesn't want the little one around. That's an unusual, yeah. Uh-huh.
But so how... Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me ask you. Okay. Now I'll tell you what you do. When you have the younger one has friends over, watch and see if the younger one gets into the same role with the contemporaries, with the peers, as he or she does with the older sibling. In other words, your concern is the younger one now learning to be more dependent, passive, etc. Or maybe the older one being domineering. But let's just worry about the younger one. So, you know, listen with a little extra ear when they have friends over. And is she like that with her peers outside of that relationship? If she is, then you have to intervene. Because you don't want that to be their behavior repertoire. Okay? Yeah, I think you were anxious to say something also, right? Yeah, right. Go ahead. Yeah,
I'm going to first I want to know if this is normal. So I can say my two oldest girls are about a year and a half apart.
That's abnormal.
and they're the ones who kind of cat. Yeah. Now, they're not always at each other, but there seems like over the last years of this.
Oh, okay. That's the last question. Yeah, okay, yeah.
They've only been always tight, but there's like little things. And so they're left. They used to be great friends, and now they're...
Don't worry about it. They'll work it. They'll love each other more if you don't get involved. Let them work it out themselves, and they'll love each other. It's the parents who say, "How can you not love your sister? You have to love your sister." That's normal. It's the normal stuff. They go into each other's closets. They take each other's clothing. And okay, yeah, I understand. Why don't we just talk?
I was late. I know. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I had a blessing for a hero who was bothering the other kids last, and to the point that it was, I had to take time out of whatever I was doing to say it. And I called him aside, and I told him that from now on, any time I see this happen, it wastes my time, because then I have to settle to get the job. To get the job. I did it three times.
Okay, the only thing you have to be careful, you have to be very careful, because sometimes it looks like one kid is the agitator, but it's so subtle. And especially this, they read each other. The kid goes like, and you didn't see him. You know, you're always better off putting the onus of responsibility on all the kids. Okay? I grew up in one. Okay? Thank you very much. That's very helpful. Thank you. Okay. Okay. No, let me...